Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick and Casey. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
I'm blanking out. Welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Regan. That is Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, well, it's Mark Waid, isn't it?
It is, man. And he comes on and talks to Casey about a lot of stuff. I mean, if you don't know Mark's work, I mean, if you go back to our very, very first episode, then our second episode, you realize that Mark is the writer behind Kingdom Come that we miscredited to Kurt Busiek, which apparently a lot of people do that because Kurt wrote Marvels with Alex Ross and Mark
I
wrote.
I didn't misdo it. You misrepresented it.
You didn't correct
I thought
me,
you
though.
Said, so. I could have sworn you said Alex Ross wrote it. Did you say
no, Busiek? I said Kurt Busiek wrote it and Alex Ross wrote the art, but Busiek wrote Marvels and Waid wrote Kingdom Come. But
right.
He comes on, he talks about the Heroes Initiative, he talks about a Thrill Bent, Humanoids, a bunch of stuff. Him and Casey have a great time. Mark is an amazing writer. He's a really good guy, and I'm sure you've read something by him if you've read comic books, because he's been writing for a long time.
Yeah, he's a great, great writer. Actually, before we get into this, why don't you give people a brief synopsis of the Heroes Initiative?
Yeah, of course. So the Hero Initiative is basically a fund to help comic creators in need. If you go to a comic convention when they're a thing again, you'll see a lot of writers and artists and people who have tables will have a little cup on their table that says donations for the Hero Initiative.
Yeah.
And then money goes back into helping out creators who need a various number of things. And Mark is a big proponent for the Hero Initiative. And it's a really great cause. I mean, I've donated to it a lot. You have too at Comic-Con. Whenever anybody we go to get something signed by, if they have one there, we always drop a few bucks in there, like for Sansakai or Mike Grell. We did it for him as well. It's great. So it's a great initiative. I fully support it as well. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's because comic artists and writers, the ones that are putting those things out there, there's no group set for, like, there's no benefits. There's no health insurance benefits.
Right.
And so it's a safety net is what this creates. And it's for emergency medical aid and financial support for essentials of life. All that kind of stuff to get him back to work.
Which is awesome. And Mark's a big part of that. And we're happy to come on and have him talk about it with us and help support it as well.
There you guys go. All right. Well, should we just get into this and hear Mark in his own words?
Let's do it.
All right, everybody, welcome again to another episode of Spoiler Country. Today on the show, we have a titan in the comics community. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk about this guy. So excited to talk to this guy. Mark Waid, how you doing, man?
Good. Please sit down, please. No standing ovations necessary. It's all good.
If I sit down, then my knees will start shaking, and then you'll hear the vibrations to the desk because I'm incredibly nervous to talk to you. I've been watching your stuff for a long time, reading your stuff for a long time, and holy cow, man. And as we were talking about before I started recording, you are from Alabama. How does one go from small town Alabama to become, you know, one of the top writers in comics?
It's a long journey, man. I mean, I grew up loving comics, but I didn't really necessarily want to be a writer. I just wanted to be maybe an editor or something. Somebody, so I wanted to be affiliated with one of the companies, especially DC, because I loved DC growing up. And so I worked like the fan press, and I did interviews, and I, you know, with creators. I worked at conventions, and I was the guy who drive you to the airport and back if you were a guest. And so that sort of got me connected and sort of interconnected with the comics community as it was at the time. I'm talking about the mid 80s. And then I went on staff at DC as an assistant editor and an associate editor for a couple of years. And then when I left that in 89, I had made enough friends and I had made enough contacts and I'd become confident enough in my own abilities as a writer to strike out on my own. And I've been incredibly lucky. It's been a nonstop thrill ride since.
Well, in addition to that luck, you have to back it up with actual work, and you've done some incredible stuff. You were talking about starting out at DC. Was there anybody there that kind of took you under their wing and just kind of helped lead you through and show you the ropes?
Yeah, absolutely. My mentor was a man named Dick Giordano, who was, Batman inker and penciler over the years, but he was also the executive editor at DC in the 80s. Great guy, and taught me everything about dealing with freelancers and, what is good in comics and what you're looking for. And he told me, one of the things he told me once that has always stuck with me as a writer is that when I was editing books, and I was editing a book there that was objectively bad. I mean, it was bad. It was badly done, but there was something about it I liked, and I couldn't figure out what that was. I went to Dick and I said, what is it about this book that it's objectively bad, and yet I sort of enjoy reading it every month? And he said, it's because the writer would write it for free and it shows. And he's absolutely right. You can't fake that enthusiasm. You can tell as a reader when the writer is invested and energetic and when they're not. And that stuck with me. So whenever I'm writing stuff, if I ever feel bored by it or if I'm ever not fired up, I just step away for a while and find some other inspiration or something, because I don't want to just keep shoveling words onto a page hoping that they'll get better as I go. I gotta be excited with every page.
What do you do to when you step back? Is there anything that, like a go-to that you kind of resort to kind of get you back into the game?
The one thing I do, it's not so much go play the flute for an hour or whatever. It's not so much that as it is going, looking at the story. If it's hung up or I'm not excited about it or something, I go back to the last place in the story that I was excited, and I just turn left. I just did as an experiment. Just what if I did this instead of this? What if I went here and said it there, just to see what happens? The worst case scenario is, I'm not any worse. I'm not any better off than I was. But a lot of times that'll cause me to come up with new energy, because I'll suddenly see things from a new perspective, or I'll have a new angle on the story that came out of nowhere because I said I was willing to take the leap and go a different place with it. And so that generally helps.
So we shouldn't expect any Mark Waid branded writer's block flutes to be sold.
No, it's $9.95 right now.
Because yeah, your version of the Music Man would be pretty amazing. So yeah, you started out at DC, you got into it, you started writing. At what point did you realize, like, oh, I've got this, I know what I'm doing, I feel confident in my work? Or is it
about an hour and a half ago? I mean, like, what time is it now? It's, I mean, you never really feel 100% that way about your work, that you're so confident you're sailing, because if you do, then the next stop is unemployment, because that means you're just too arrogant to be looking at your own work. And it's that I talk to Tom Pyre a lot. He's one of my best friends.
Amazing.
And he's amazing. And we talk about story a lot. And I called him up the other night. I'm working on something right now that I'm kind of having a tough time with. And I wrote him back. I said, I'm paralyzed. I'm terrified by this. I can't find my way through the story And I've got all this anxiety. He says, well, that's how you know you're doing it right. Which is true. I mean, that means that I'm really paying attention. And once I find it, once I find the little hook that gets me through the scene or figure out where the story is supposed to be going, then it's all going to flow. I mean, it's just going to take like one thing. And I don't know what that thing is, but I'll find it and then I won't be able to stop writing. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my answer. To be even more serious about your question. I mean, there was a point, I guess, in the 90s after Flash was taking off and doing something, and I started to get calls from Marvel to do work over there. Then I kind of knew, okay, I've got a short-term career here at least. I don't know how long this ride's going to last, but I'm in demand. and I'm gonna enjoy that. And it's, like I said, I've just been awfully fortunate because I've never had to pick up the phone. That is not a humble brag. That is a statement of astounding awesome, you know, just awe at how lucky and how grateful I am that it's been this long a ride. Nobody gets a career like this. I mean, I've not had to look for work in 32 years, 33 years, whatever it's been.
That's pretty amazing. Your work on Legion was my introduction to the characters. And
which version?
Legion 93? Like after.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I wasn't familiar with like the backstory or anything. And it made all that stuff that I probably would have thought was like hokey with the old stuff. It made those characters seem so cool. And there was so much personality and characterization in
it. Thank you.
So it was really enjoyable. I think I was, oh my gosh, I was like 12 when it came out. So
that's my wheelhouse. It's not the big, I mean, I can do big action sequences or I can do giant fight scenes or I can do that kind of stuff, but that's not the special sauce. I mean, the special sauce for me is the getting in the heads of the characters and like experiencing the story through their eyes and what would their lives be like if they had superpowers and how would they perceive this moment if they had these abilities and how would they solve this challenge? And how does that make them feel? Like how does that change their perspective on the world around them? Thinking about these characters, I mean, I've been thinking about them all my life and I can do 30 minutes unbroken on any DC character, you know, just give you the lecture. And the same with the Marvel guys. It's that's the fun of it for me.
So going back to you said you've been thinking about them all your life. What was it about comics that hit you?
I'll never know. I know that I was hooked at a very young age. I was like three, I guess. And the Batman TV show had come out and my dad had seen some comics and remembered Batman. And when he was a kid and he brought home a couple of comics and that was just it. I mean, that was it. I was born one of those, you know, quote unquote child prodigy kids. I was reading by the time I was four. And I was, you know, always the brainy kid in class. And I skipped a couple of years in school. So I was reading at a really early age. And comics clearly helped me learn to read. And so I just got bonded with them when I was a kid. Also, we moved around a lot. When I was a boy, I went to something like 10 different schools in 8 years. And I think that the characters being who they were, and that there was the sense of stability with those characters. They didn't have long-term friends because we moved so much, but the characters were stable. Like I could always count on Superman to be where I needed him to be. I could always count on Batman to be in a Batman comic. And I think I found my tribe there.
I hear you. So you recently returned to DC Comics after being away for quite a while. I'm really excited to see what you're doing. And how does it feel to be back to those characters? It seems just to me great. Like that's your heart.
That is my wheelhouse. Yeah. I mean, I love the Marvel characters. I really do, but I didn't imprint on them when I was 4, 5, 6 years old. I mean, it was a little while before I learned got to round to the Marvel characters, but the DC characters, I love them so much. You know, I mean, if you could look around my apartment right now, it's like a goddamn museum.
I see suits behind you. So,
oh yeah, exactly. It's like the Kingdom Come restaurant here. So that's the thing. I just that's where my heart is. So we haven't announced anything. We haven't formally put forward, but I'm working on some stuff now. I've got some DC stuff cooking, and I'm sure we'll be making some announcements soon.
Nice. I'm not going to press you any further because I don't want you to spill any beans that shouldn't be spilled. I'm a terrible reporter or whatever. But yeah, I'm super excited about your working with DC again. Does this mean that you're done with Marvel for the time being?
Oh, no. I mean, the nice thing about not signing exclusive contracts, which I have an aversion to, is that nobody cares whether, I mean, in Marvel, they don't care if you work at DC as long as you're doing your Marvel work and vice versa. So I turned down a Marvel gig the other day just because I didn't have the time for it, but it was a really interesting and exciting opportunity. So I think that I mean, really a big part of my energy right now is going towards Humanoids, where I'm the publisher of that publishing company. And that most comics fans don't know them well, but they're very well known in Europe, and they're very well known for graphic novels. And
well, can we talk about that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so let us know about Humanoids, because I've been reading up on it, and it's really cool. So how did you get involved with Humanoids?
I was friends with her sales manager. This is a couple, 3 years ago. I guess 2.5 years ago. So, good friends with their sales manager, and they were looking for somebody to come on board as a writer on a new line of books they were doing. And I got in there and I started talking to Fabrice Geiger, who is the owner and the CEO and the head honcho of the guy. And they had just begun. They've been very popular in Europe. They've been very prestigious in Europe for decades. And they wanted to open up an American branch and see what they could do to penetrate the American market with comics and graphic novels. I sat down with Fabrice and I knew my stuff, and I've been doing this for a long time. There's literally no position in comics that I haven't held, whether it's owned a store or, you know, been a publisher or an editor or a writer or an artist. Or, I mean, I've done so much that I was able to sit down with them and say, okay, if you were going to expand, here's what I would do, X, Y, and Z. And that just led to a conversation that brought me in as a consultant for a while, year and a half, whatever. And then that led to publishing. That led to the publisher gig in February, right before the pandemic started. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's been a challenge. It's been a huge challenge, but yeah, we're making headway. We've got some other stuff to announce later this year, but you know, if anybody here is watching and knows what the Incal is by Mobius and
Jodorowsky, oh my God, you know, it's amazing.
The Meta Barons, all that. That's Humanoid stuff. And so they've also been doing a lot of quieter, like sort of more down to earth graphic novels. It's called the Life Drawn imprint, where we do biographies and autobiographies. It's a wide range of things we're doing. And so that's, like I said, it's a challenge in COVID, but we're doing well.
But that's
a huge part of my day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So what, given that you do have that position with Humanoids, I mean, how do you divide your day up? Because you have,
yeah.
How do you work life balance, but also you're balancing the creative work with your.
First off, there is no work life balance. There's just work life balance is I take Saturdays off, but work balance, I spend a lot of my mornings working on the administrative stuff, because that doesn't take a whole lot of creative brain power. Because I found over the years that I don't really sort of kick into gear until, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the afternoon. And then I just, once I get that energy and I get rolling on something as a writer, then I just keep going. So that's, you know, mornings and early afternoons is the Humanoid stuff. And then sort of segueing into the freelance stuff in the afternoons and evenings, there's still not enough hours in the day. And I'm still having a difficult time juggling some of that stuff. I've taken on 1 too many assignments right now. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, wow.
Don't tell my editors, but I'm like one too many assignments right now, but I'm making do. Yeah. It's a guy, like, I can't, what's the alternative? I could be digging ditches. This is a great job.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And so while you're doing your writing, do you listen to music? Do you have TV on or anything like that? Or is it just Mark Wade is staring at a computer and he is at it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I can have soundtrack music on, but I can't have anything with words. It just messes me up. Same with TV, same with movies. Any, I just need to focus. I have the attention span of a toaster as it is. And so it's helpful if I don't have that many distractions.
I hear you. Can you tell us about your book Ignited?
Yeah, it's over now. We gave it a valiant try, and it frankly, just the market wasn't, you know, this wasn't the place for it or whatever, but it was an interesting idea. It was Humanoids. They came to me and they said, we want to do this book about teenage survivors of a school shooting who then get superpowers and are able to be socially active. And so, you know, social activist about that and politically active. And that was my wheelhouse. I mean, that's complete. I use the word wheelhouse a lot tonight. That's my jam. That's my, you know, that kids, you know, fighting back against, you know, gun violence, that means a lot to me. It's something I feel very strongly about. And so being able to write these characters who weren't, they're not all Robin, you know, I mean, they're not all Kid Flash. They're not all squeaky clean kids. They're teenagers with superpowers and a real hate on for the circumstances and the tools and the things in society that lead to school shootings. And so they went out and they kicked ass and they took names. And some of the stuff they did was not necessarily, you know, Superman approved, but that's the way these kids would be. And so that ran, I did that with Kwanzaa Ojafeo as a co-writer for about 10 issues. 10th issue, I think, is coming out in a couple weeks, month, something like that. And it was a good ride. It just, as I say, through no one specific thing, it just didn't take off, you know, but nobody bats 1,000. So,
yeah, well, it struck a chord with me because my wife is a kindergarten teacher who has had to explain to a 5-year-old why she is putting them all in the storage closet and why they should hold the door at all costs while they have these drills. And it's heartbreaking.
It's hard during the Capitol assault. I mean, it was the young pages and stuff in the senator's offices who had everything down pat. They knew what to do, you know, in terms of shit. And they were asked, how did you know? And they said, we've learned it in school.
It's just ridiculous.
Heartbreaking. So, yeah.
Another thing, speaking of things I like about you, I like that you do not shy away from your opinion as it pertains to politics. Has that ever been an issue in regards to, like, the companies that you work for? Have they ever been like, hey, man, chill out for a little while?
No, they never have been. I mean, I think part of that is just because they know I'm not going to shut up anyway. I make a conscious choice if I, you know, go all super heavy liberal, you know, on social media, that I know that there's going to be a certain amount of readers who will be turned off by that. And that's unfortunate, but that's the price you pay. I think that I have, for better or worse, circumstances and years of experience, whatever, have given me a platform with a pretty loud voice. And I think that that is a responsibility. And I think that that to not use that voice to help talk about social injustice, to help to talk about these things, I think is a waste. And I think that I have an obligation to do that if I feel that strongly. And my obligation socially to this world and to society, as we all have an obligation to society and to each other, outweighs sales figures to me. And I figure that, you know, clearly I want to keep selling comics, but at the end of the day, if push comes to shove, the moment you tell me not to do something, I just get all, I'm going to go, you know, hard on it. So, yeah.
I can respect it. One thing that I notice about you when you talk about comics is you still seem like you get excited by the medium. Is there anything that's blowing your hair back right now?
There's something, what's the name now?
I asked you the hard questions.
No. I'm trying to remember the name of the book that just came out and it escapes me. It's done by the writer artist who did a graphic novel called King City, and it's Brandon Montclair, maybe. If it's not Brandon Montclair, I'm really sorry, but that stuff blows my mind. He's using the form. He's using anybody who uses the tools of storytelling in a different way, like when David Aja and Matt Fraction were doing
Brandon Graham. Aja.
Yeah, yes.
He's fantastic.
Problem with, you know, 6 or 7 panels a page that look like a standard comic, but if you want to break the medium, if you want to try different ways of storytelling, that gets me excited. That gets me ramped up.
I hear you. Is there anybody else that you think is just really bringing it right now?
Right this second? Man, I never come to the table prepared for this question. I think that Josh Williamson's bringing it. I think that Daniel Kennedy Johnson as a writer is really bringing it.
He is amazing. Yes.
He's really good. Yeah, yeah.
Philip Kennedy Johnson. Yeah.
He's
on Superman now, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. Philip Kennedy Johnson.
He did Cap, too.
Yeah, but forgive, and if they're listening, forgive me. I've been. This is when you're a publisher, you deal with 85 freelancers a day and names just start to run together. If I haven't met you face to face, it's harder for me to lock on your name. If I it's not much of an excuse because I can name every single member of the Legion of Superheroes and all of your home planets. So it's not really, I can't really say, well, my memory sucks, but anyway.
You just enjoy the Legion of Superheroes more than actual people. And that's fine.
That's pretty much, this is why COVID lockdown has not been an issue. I sit alone in my house all day long anyway. So yeah.
Speaking of COVID, has it really affected your productivity as a writer?
Yeah, yes. Most everybody, every writer I've talked to. And it's, you would think it would be the opposite because now we don't have distractions. Now we finally have the opportunity to sit down and write that big, you know, the great American novel that we've been putting off because we didn't have time. But it just doesn't work that way. We are, as my therapist puts it, like this is not post-traumatic stress we're feeling. We're still in the trauma phase. This whole year has been that with COVID and with, you know, what's going on with the elections and so forth. It's every writer I know is having the same problem focusing, is having the same problem, you know, finding the energy. And it's a real thing. It's a real neurological thing that doctors are looking at right now with creatives and people whose jobs depend on that sort of intense focus, that neurologically the conditions of the lockdowns, the conditions of the world, the place we live in right now, where, you know, you're wearing a mask everywhere and you're afraid to talk to anybody and afraid to touch anybody, that's affecting people. And I wish it weren't affecting me. But I can tell that I'm not as productive as I want to be. And I'm hoping that, you know, we'll all get inoculated, and I'm hoping we'll all see this go away by the end of 2021 at the latest, and maybe we'll be back to normal.
Yeah, yeah. I found out today that my wife, who has 20 kids in her classroom, they just took her off of one of the, they moved her back on the inoculation list.
Yeah.
On the vaccine list. So yeah. She has to wait with everybody else, even though she's going to be.
Oh, so in other words, they didn't put her back on. They moved her literally. They shoved her further down the line.
Yes.
Oh, that's
infuriating.
Cool. Yes. Yeah.
So what do you do when you get down? Like when you're just in a pit?
Wow. That's a great question.
I mean, the past 4 years have been kind of just like insane doom scrolling and just, ugh.
It's hard because, I spend all my time thinking about and writing about Captain America and Superman and characters like that. And it's hard to write those characters without believing that people are basically good and that America is basically a great place to be. And it has been very difficult in the last 4 years because the unmasking of the fact that there's just so many people out there who are racist, so many people out there who are just flat out, you know, white supremacists and flat out, you know, just horrible people.
Yeah.
The sheer number of them has been, I know that's naive. I know that every black friend of mine is like, dude, where you been? You know, but from my privileged position, I want to believe that we have made progress in racism. We've made progress in my lifetime toward that. And to find out in the last few years that we really haven't, it's been very debilitating. I don't know if you asked me to write Captain America right now, I don't know that I could do it. I don't know what I would do. I don't know how you could write that character in this America right now. And I thank God that Ta-Nehisi Coates is doing a great job with it because I couldn't.
Speaking of characters that you've, you know, put your mark on, and is there anybody that you would really want to get another swing at? Because, I mean, you've done everyone, pretty much.
Well, that's just it. I mean, this is a conversation that Tom Brevoort at Marvel and I have all the time, which is every couple of years. It's like, okay, well, you're done with Doctor Strange. What else is there to do? Well, I've done everything else. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back and, like, do another run on Fantastic Four, because then all people are going to do is look at that and compare it to the last run of Fantastic Four. And they're going to remember it better than it was. And so that trick never works. Something like never going back to Wally, you know, never going back to the FF, never going back to Daredevil, because again,
I love that. All you're doing is way.
Thank you. But I mean, all you're doing is competing with people's memory of how good it was. Not even necessarily how good it was, but how much they remember it being maybe better than it was. So I've never taken a swing at Iron Man, and I've never written a Batman book. I've written a Batman story here or there, and I've written him in Justice League, but I've never really written Batman. And, you know, there's an itch there. Maybe we can find a way to scratch that in 2021.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I know you got to wrap up soon, but I'm really looking forward to what you're going to be doing at DC. And I'm grinning like an idiot thinking about it.
Knowing what you are responding to, I don't think that you'll be disappointed. That's all I can say.
Awesome. Awesome. So is there anything else you want to talk about before we shut this bad boy down?
I think so. Let's go back to the bucking myself up in a bad place, you know, question, because I realized I feel like I left the interview on a real down note. I
didn't want to do that.
I recharge through comics. I'll like Uncle Scrooge in his money bin, and, you know, swimming through them, like, you know, diving through my old comics. Like, yeah, there's a sequence in Flash number zero, which is arguably the best thing I ever wrote. There's a sequence in Flash number zero where Wally goes back in time and by accident and stumbles across himself as like a 10-year-old kid, and is able to tell the 10-year-old version of himself, everything's going to be cool. You know what? I know you're stressed. I know you feel anxious about your family. I know that you move around a lot. You don't have a lot of friends, but everything's going to work out. And that came from a personal experience. That came from me visiting my home in Oxford, okay, Alabama, and driving by and just looking at that house and just wishing, this is years and years ago, but I mean, wishing that I could just see young Mark Waid in the backyard so I could walk up to him and tell him everything's going to be cool. So there's that sequence in Flash, and I, through some incredible stroke of luck, someone had those pages, the original art pages, at a convention in Florida a few years ago, and I bought them off the guy. And those three pages, that sequence is framed and hangs above my desk. So whenever I'm feeling disconnected, or whenever I'm, you know, start to doom scroll or start to feel, you know, bad about things, that's a good place to look, is look up at those three pages and remember that that is why I love comics.
That's an awesome way to end it, and a great story. I love hearing that. I think, as far as, you know, comics being a sanctuary for you and like something that you go back to time and time again, you're not alone in that. And in a way, it kind of helped to get you through some tough times.
Yeah. And it still does, you know, it's and nothing wrong with that. As long as that's not the only thing you use to get you through tough times, because then you're just living in the past and you want to do that, but it's fine to go back into the past every once in a while. Especially in these last few months where it's just been one thing after another.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have two kids, and we had a tornado the other day. So
everybody I heard about this. Was it? It hit. Not too close, I hope.
No, it was like 2 miles away from my house. It was rough, dude. Luckily, nothing got destroyed at, you know, my house or any of my family. 2 miles down the road, just homes were just straight up like nothing was there. It was like an angry finger just went and just scratched into the earth. It was awful. But
one came within a block of my house once when I was living in Delaware, and it was the scariest thing in the world.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's nothing you can do. And it just, the luck of God, houses a block away were matchsticks, and we were fine. So
yeah, there's no reason to run.
Right. I'm glad that it worked out for you. I thought about that the other day when I saw the news. Whenever I see the words Alabama and tornado in a headline, I go looking at that story.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's, so what, we were down in the basement, and that's where I keep all my comics. And my 6-year-old was like, what are these? And I was just kind of watching from the side and not being like, you know, hey, don't bend that spine or anything. I wanted her to get into it and just see what she reacted to. And it was so fun.
That's cool. What did she react to?
She was really into, what was she reading? She found an old copy of Superboy that I had, and it was from like the 90s, but I think she liked the colors in it.
Yeah, cool. Whatever works, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's already reading like on a fourth grade level. And I think it's because She's been at home with her mom, who is a teacher.
I get that. I totally get that. I was lucky. I was an only kid too, and I was with my mom, you know, 24/7 when I was a kid, and that was, you know, she taught me. She taught me from a very early age because I had that. I had that time and experience. So I'm glad that your daughter has the same.
Oh, I'm loving it. So, yeah. Mark, thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
Anytime you want to come back on the show, by all means, let us know, because I want to talk about what's coming up.
Yeah, you know, ping me in about 6 months when we've made some announcements. But drop me a line and we'll see what we can do.
Awesome.
I'd love to stay longer tonight if I could, but as we've already gone over, I'm already way late on everything. So I've
also, it's about dinner time over there. So
there is that. So, all right, good talking to you, and we'll talk again soon.
Mark Wade, thank you so much, brother. Have a good one.
You bet. Take care.
And we're back.
That's right. We are back. Back in the saddle again. Well, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that as much as we did making it for you. And if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, you got to go check out spoilerverse.com, because at spoilerverse.com, we have a plethora. Plethora is such a snobbish word.
I like it, though. It's a good word.
We have an obscene amount of interviews with amazing directors and artists of all walks of life, and editors and writers. And oh my God, are you a lover of comic books like we are? Then there's
so many
amazing people from the comic book world over at spoilerverse.com. And I highly implore you to go there and check it out.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts on our network, like Bridges and Geekdoms and Funny Book Forensics and Haphazard Adventures and Nerds from the Crypt and so many more.
Misery Point Radio.
Episodes all the time. Misery Point Radio has got a ton of great stuff out there. Go check all of them out. And check out all of the reviews and previews and articles we have going up every single day for you, every day on Spoilerverse.com for you to check out, to read, and to love, and to like, and to comment. We have a store link. If you want to help support the site, you can do it two ways. One, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/spoilercountry, or go to our store link in the middle of the site there and get a t-shirt, a face mask, a hoodie, something. Look fly as hell and help support the site when you do that, because we get a dollar or two. And, you know, maybe you want to talk to us. If you do, you can do it, you know, obviously on all the socials, but if you go to scpod.us/discord, you can join our public Discord server and come chat with us all day long.
I couldn't say it better myself, dude.
There you go.
You just mouthed out a ton of information at once. And really, I hope you guys enjoy what you're hearing, because we're working our butts off to bring it to you.
We are.
I guess there's only one left thing. One left thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it. There's only one left thing left to do.
What's that?
In an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. As Cthulhu compels you to do, open the mind.
And even more.